Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Matt Brodsky, a man that we consult with about matters involving the Middle East, in which he has considerable insights. He has been reporting and writing and thinking about these issues for many years, including at places like the Jewish Policy Center. He is also a frequent contributor to the various outlets like the Daily Caller that are important sources of information about all of these public policy issues. And we're grateful to him for taking a few minutes to talk with us about them. Matt, welcome back. Good to have you.
Good to be with you.
I wanted to ask you first about something you did write about recently, Matt, namely the Iranian hand in the attacks that Israel was subjected to from Gaza. We're often encouraged to believe that Sunnis and Shia can't collaborate with one another, and yet in this case, as there are other examples, they have made common cause, the Sunnis of Hamas and the Shia of Iran, to attack a common enemy, namely the State of Israel. Tell us what the evidence is that this was actually Iran's doing through their Hamas proxies.
Well, this all fits in the wider context of Iran trying to demonstrate that it and its proxies can strike up a war and make things difficult for the U.S. and its allies throughout the entire region. It's not just in the Straits of Hormuz and the Arabian or Persian Gulf, but through Syria, through Lebanon, of course, and in Gaza, which I think people more associate with Hamas since they're in control. It's the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, though, that is a proxy that is essentially run by Iran. And in this the previous round that happened over a weekend saw 690 rockets launched. That began with a Palestinian Islamic Jihad sniper taking a shot across the Gaza fence at an Israeli commander. So they began the operation. The rockets that they used, they unveiled a newer rocket that is most analysts think is based on Iranian technology. But also when you look at who Israel targeted in its response, half of those it killed were Palestinian Islamic Jihad members. They were the most active over the course of the weekend. And what that is doing from Iran's perspective is to show Israel specifically that not only does it have terror tunnels from Hezbollah and many rockets from Lebanon, and not only are they entrenching themselves within Syria, but they can also open a third front from Gaza. And that is all happening at the same time that it can threaten the U.S. interests in Saudi Arabia from Yemen and from Iraq and through its militias that it has there, including the transfer of longer range, 700 kilometer range rockets into Western Iraq that can put Tel Aviv in range and large parts of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Matt Brodsky, I wanted to ask you about one other item that I think you refer to in this article in the Washington Free Beacon, is that Iran's technology is being drawn upon by Hamas for these attacks. How does that technology get into their hands, given that Israel has, as I understand it, had a pretty tight quarantine on access to Gaza, especially now that the Egyptians are supposedly keeping their part of that territory sealed off?
That's a good question, and that's something clearly the Israelis are most concerned about. The rockets so far have not been precision guided from Gaza. And so from Israel's threat assessment, they are more concentrated on the northern theater with the type of rockets that they are able to ship through Iraq and what they're able to ship into Lebanon. Syria has increasingly become a more difficult arena for Iran to transfer weapons through because Israel has been fairly successful there. In Gaza, it's a creeping type of threat that continues, but Netanyahu, as prime minister, has been reluctant to do a much wider operation there, mostly because it would change the focus from to Israel's south as opposed to the north, where the much larger Iranian threat looms.
But is it presumed to be coming in from the sea? And isn't Israel trying to maintain essentially a blockade of those waters? I know there's a lot of talk when these attacks take place that one of the things that the Palestinians demand is more areas in which they can do fishing operations. That's always, I think, been seen as a vehicle for getting smuggled items into the country. But talk us through that, if you would, Matt Brodsky.
Right. That is a nonstop issue. And incidentally, what always tends to factor into ceasefires. Like, for instance, as part of the ceasefire from the last round in Gaza, Israel agreed to increase the area outside of Gaza in the waters where Gazans can go fishing. Then a day or so ago, there was an incident that occurred and Israel curtailed that. So this is one of the main ways that they would be getting rocket technology. But beyond that, it's technology also that the terrorist groups within Gaza are able to use and to copy. And that's why you could see from what Israel bombed, they were going after these type of underground factories. All of this is an Iranian blueprint that they use in Lebanon and they've used in Syria and elsewhere, underground manufacturing facilities.
Matt, let me switch gears here, not altogether, but to a different sort of theater, shall we say, for the Israelis to contend with the Palestinian threat. And that is Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, is said to be now poised to roll out at last the plan for a new peace initiative that has been in the works, I think, from practically the beginning of the Trump administration. The first foray in this effort will be a conference in Bahrain towards the end of next month. I understand that you have some insights into what's going on here. To the extent you can share with us those insights, tell me what you think is afoot and its prospects.
I think the conference that they're hosting in Bahrain on June 25th and 26th is designed to create an economic blueprint for investment to paint a picture for the Palestinian people at this point, I think more so than the leadership, of what the future could look like. And I think that's very important because as time continues to tick, the clock ticks, what we're seeing is a larger disparity between the leadership of the Palestinians in the West Bank, who essentially are getting rather comfortable with the status quo, and the people who would like a better life in a way that can see many of their aspirations looked after. So this economic conference is to kind of create momentum to come in with sugar and do that before releasing the parts of the political plan, which the administration has said will address the core issues in the conflict.
Hmm. To the extent that all of this presupposes, as have various peace processes in the past, a disregard for sort of the tenets of Sharia, which certainly Hamas embraces in a full-throated way and the Palestinian Authority does more or less, namely that any territory that is ever held by Muslims can never be relinquished, can never ultimately be turned over permanently to non-Muslims, let alone Jews. This would seem to me to be likely, as have previous initiatives, to come to naught. What do you make of that hard-learned lesson, Matt Brodsky?
Well, first, the administration has been quite clear in stressing that from their perspective, they see security as the number one issue for Israel, and of course, they're going to protect that. Number two is they're quick to point out that by adhering to calcified talking points, as the Palestinian leadership does, it has gotten them nothing. And there is, as we say, a disparity now between them and the people, because this isn't going to lead anywhere forward for Palestinian aspirations. They're simply not going to be able to adhere to a Sharia type of law in any form of future and threaten Israel. So, I mean, that is all taken into account in what the administration is going to present. But the fact is, and this is why the focus is on the economy, that's to begin with is because these are actual real tangible things that can improve the day-to-day life of Palestinians, which is hopefully something that will, once they have a taste of that, this is something that they would embrace and say, well, we would like more opportunities, not less. And what we see in Gaza and from Hamas is certainly not something that would that they would want to emulate in the West Bank.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thesis, and we'll see it tested here, I guess, shortly. My personal assessment has been that whatever the aspirations of the Palestinian people may be, they will be forced to submit to the dictates of Sharia, which will preclude any such concessions to the Israelis, and continuing privation, presumably, for the Palestinian people. Well, Matt Brodsky, I know you'll be on top of this, and we'll look forward to your reporting on it. And I appreciate your taking the time to visit with us today concerning the latest on what's happening with Iran and the Middle East more generally. Next up, we'll speak with J. Michael Waller about what might be developing in Russia in the way of opposition to Vladimir Putin and what is unfortunately playing out in terms of opposition to the opposition to Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. That and more straight ahead.